Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. And I'm really excited to introduce today's guest. He's Ken Brew, CEO of Carby Corporation. Carby Corporation is a 75-year-old family-owned business based in Connecticut. Originally founded by a group of toolmakers, Carby has been a staple in precision manufacturing for decades. As the company reached a pivotal point in its growth, the board made the strategic decision to hire Ken as a non-family CEO, bringing his extensive business development experience from multinational corporations to lead Carby into the future. Ken, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Ed. I am excited to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. So let's start at the beginning. What drew you to the opportunity at Carby Corporation, and how did you know that was a good fit for you?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and here's why. So I'll give you a little bit of background about myself. Between undergrad in graduate school, I had a job working in a, we'll call it a job shop, not a business a whole lot different than what I'm at. And it's a job I don't even put on my resume, but the Carby job actually has come full circle. And I'll tell you why. After business school, I went to work for GE for about 10 years in their transportation systems business, where I started out in their manufacturing management program. So I was in operations and I was there for a number of years, and a very intense job, but in my mind, not particularly intellectually stimulating. And so I wanted ultimately to run a business. And so I started to diversify within that transportation systems business. I got into project management of these huge locomotive contracts. And then I actually got into sales with a joint venture that moved me from Erie, Pennsylvania to Florida for a couple of years, and then actually to Sydney, Australia for a couple of years. And when I repatriated, I wanted to diversify out of that industry. And I got into consumer products. So I went to GE Lighting in Cleveland, Ohio, where I was there for a few years, and then went to Moen, the faucet company that's also in Cleveland, where I became the vice president of retail sales. And then in 2007, Legrand called. Legrand is a French multinational. It's about $7 billion, about $4 billion, and it may have grown actually since I've last checked, but it's probably about $4 billion here in the U.S. And they asked me to run their consumer business. I was able to take a $100 million business and grow it into about a $200 million business. And along all these places, the most fun I had with any of those companies is when I was with some of the more entrepreneurial ventures within these large companies. So the Carby opportunity presented itself about a year and a half ago, and it was very similar to what I first did, which I thought was really interesting. It was a small company where I've always had the most fun, where we could get the most done. They were actually very good at what they do. In fact, financially sound. So that was a great benefit. And it was just a good fit. And so I was really excited to, if you will, come full circle in my career and really have the chance to be the CEO of a company that I believe had great potential.
Awesome. So what is it in you that drew you to these more entrepreneurial, you've had success with them in your career, but what is it you think in yourself that drew you to these more entrepreneurial style businesses?
Yeah. Ever since I was young, the things that excited me most were, I've always been very competitive and just always to win. Also, I've always been a builder, and whether it was building Lego as a kid or building companies, I've really enjoyed the growth aspect and the challenges of growing a business as opposed to maybe working on the productivity of the operation. Now, I've got a great foundation from GE there, but when you like to win and you like growing, it lends itself to smaller entrepreneurial opportunities where you can really move fast without bureaucracy and have really substantial impact. And that's just really, and that to me is fun.
Awesome. About a year and a half, you joined the company. Talk about some of your first impressions. So coming on, and how did that compare to maybe some of what you'd just come away from, which was more large multinational? So what was first impression coming on the job at Carby?
Yeah, it's funny because for the interview process, the opportunity presented itself, and I'm like, the Carby Corporation stamps parts. Who can't anybody stamp parts? And so I went in there curious as to, you know, what could make this business special. How do they, quite honestly, how do they go from day to day? But I also knew that they were financially actually quite strong. So it was interesting. It's like, how do you manage to do that in what appears to be a commodity business? But through the course of the interviewing process, and when I stepped into the job, it was clear that this was a solid business that was really at a pivot point. They really didn't have a growth plan in place, nor did they really have, if you will, the talent to grow. And I'm not talking about just sending out some more salespeople, because where do you send them? It's about how do you grow in a 2025 global environment? And so the reason that the board went outside for a person is because they wanted a person who, A, had a growth mentality in a global environment, and B, someone who could bring in, if you will, worldwide best practices from great companies. And fortunately, they chose me. But really, those were the two things they were looking for. And really, it's really, and this is where I give them credit, and this is where I think this is really relevant to your audience, is the board recognized that, if you will, the family legacy was not going to necessarily work for this company. And I look this way because that's my window. And in the Watertown, Waterbury, Connecticut area, it is a center of excellence for metalworking. It's unbelievable. Our maybe one or two key competitors worldwide are within a mile of us. It's crazy. But there's also a lot of businesses here struggling and not really understanding what to do because the phone isn't ringing consistently like it did anymore. You have to go out. You have to be relevant. You have to find customers worldwide. And the board recognized that, quite honestly. And that's really why, to their credit, that's the trajectory we are on now.
So speaking of the board, can you share a bit about your interactions with the board, both family, I'm assuming there's still family and non-family sitting at the table. And to what extent did they buy in or support, do they support your vision for the company? Like how did that unravel?
Yeah. So first I'll give you a little history of Carby. So Roy Nelson, Generation One, bought the company from five toolmakers in 1947. And if you take the first letter of each of their five names, you come up with Carby. And Roy ran his business, and then his son Joel took over. And Joel was really a visionary. And he grew the business and grew the building, grew the size of the business, really grew the reach and capabilities of the business. And when he decided to step back, the third generation wanted to continue the business, but was not interested in running the business. And so they hired from within, they hired a CEO. He knew the business, he knew the industry well, but really what he had learned in the business. And the third generation who's on the board, along with family financial advisors and actually the former CEO, so these group of individuals realized that they needed to take that next step. So part of the answer to your question is, how do I interact with them? I'm in a fortunate situation. The first thing is, they actually knew before they hired me that they had to make a change. If you will, a lot of the hard work was done before I even got there.
Okay.
The second thing is, the interaction with them is really, it's a good interaction for any CEO, because number one, they do ask the tough questions, the fiduciary questions, the strategy questions. They want to know, quite honestly, that there's a plan, and you would expect that. And we look at the numbers. But what they do is, when I have some business proposals that, quite honestly, need some fast decisions, they make them. I'll give you an example. We brought in a couple of CNC machines to make the tools that we then put into our presses to stamp out parts. And the idea of bringing these machines in was to decrease our purchase services and decrease our cycle time in our business. When you rapid prototype in our business, the first part has to be a production part, but where we can squeeze down the time from first discussion to first part is our ability to rapid prototype. Well, we determined as an executive team, we wanted to do that in November Thanksgiving, and we took it to the board. They said, yes, we had the machines in-house on January 1st, and we were making parts 3 months later. So we went from concept to making parts and delivering productivity in less than 3 months. That is astounding. That would never happen in large companies. And this board made that decision. And I guess the last thing the board does is they stay out of our way on the day-to-day. And as long as we continue to provide sound stories and bring in solid results, which fortunately we have at the board meetings, it's good.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. And is that pretty consistent, their willingness to move quickly for you when you make a good case and they'll back you and they'll move quick? Is that pretty standard operating procedure for them?
Yeah, I would say this. I would say we've proposed three things. Two of them were direct investments in capacity to grow our business, and they accepted them. There was another one where we received a major grant from the U.S. government to put solar on the roof. But when we sat back and said, is that really the best use of our cash? The board said no, and quite honestly, had to agree with them. So they have been, in my opinion, effective in the decisions that they make.
Okay, excellent. When you came on board, what would you say is the most significant cultural shift that you've observed since taking on as CEO?
Yeah, it really is how I've had to change the business from, if you will, a family, kind of, that's the wrong way to say it, but a business that was content operating as it is, hoping the phone would ring, they continue to really a growth entrepreneurial mindset. And that is for people that have never operated in that kind of environment, it is a much more intense, competitive, fun environment. And so that's been a big swing. Now, I've been very fortunate because the executives, when presented with this opportunity, have actually, I would say, blossomed. My senior vice president of operations, and I would confidently say, is one of the best three or four people in the world at this. It was like I unleashed him. I allowed him to go out and get more involved in industry-wide organizations, to be more involved with our customer meetings, to making more strategic decisions on how we buy steel and things like that. And it's tremendous. By the person who runs HR and finance, this woman is so sharp at what she does. But now when she asks questions, I'm like, well, what do you think? And now we're making decisions together. So the executive team is really awesome. And that probably is my single biggest joy in this business, is watching that. Then in the organization, there are other people who understand, quite honestly, this type of enthusiasm, this type of energy in the business is actually will help ensure that they will have a job for many years. And because, as I said earlier, as we look around this area where Carby is, that's not the case. And so that's been fun, and they've responded. And then I'll be serious, said there are some that, quite honestly, have not been able to make the leap, have become, it just wasn't going to work out. Mm-hmm. And so we've had to make some changes. But for me, the fortunate part, as I said earlier, has been the executive team has really flourished.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And coming in, did you kind of have a sense of their potential, or was that discovered upon joining?
Yeah, that was a little bit of a roll of the dice, to be honest with you. Yeah, because I didn't actually meet with all the executive team at the time of my interviewing.
Okay, understood. So looking back during that transition, what might be the biggest challenge you did face or challenges you faced, and how did you work through them in terms of coming on?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to what I said, and that is that transition from, if you will, a company that was plodding along and enjoying a nice, comfortable existence to, if you will, of an entrepreneurial mindset. I've had to institute my style of management, and I actually had to stop and actually think about this and why it has worked most places I've been, is I would call it almost informal intensity. And what I mean by that is, number one, I set, if you will, audacious goals. So a growth is not 5%, 10%, it's 2x or it's 3x. It's how do we substantially change this business so that it's much bigger? So think about it. If you reach half of a 2X, you've grown the company 50%. So those are audacious goals. Number two, stay consistent to those goals. So when you set a strategy with the team to go after those goals, you aren't flopping left and right and deviating from that path. You have to stay consistent to that message. And the third thing is, and this is where the informal part comes, we have a lot of fun. We joke around a lot. You have to, in the face of day in, day out intensity, you have to make it fun. Otherwise, people are simply just going to burn out. And I have to be alert to the signs of, if you will, stress in those people and then dial it back appropriately. And I think what that does for everybody, though, is when you have that, when people start winning, and we were about to close a fiscal year that and it's been a very nice fiscal year for us, people enjoy that. They enjoy winning. They enjoy being part of growth. They don't want to obviously be part of going in the other direction. And I think it gives them a sense of satisfaction. And again, just that it's fun. So again, so the answer to your question really has been, if you will, changing that mindset.
Understood. In fact, it makes me think of my brother just exited his company for a sizable sum. And one of his key employees stayed on very long time. Excellent. She was probably top of her class. Many offers to go other places. Could have been less hours, more money, all that stuff probably. And he asked her at the end, why did you stay with me? And she said, oh gosh, I would have missed the action. Because there's something electrifying being with a company that's on the up. And it's very exciting and exhilarating. And it sounds like your people are starting to feel that and see what's happening and it's taking root. And that's exciting.
And here's another thing. And I'll tell you how this is successful. So one of the challenges in our industry is actually finding skilled tool makers. And we could spend a couple hours talking about that. And it's really hard to find skilled tool makers. We're actually getting resumes from all over, from the good tool makers to come join us. And so if you ask, what's causing that? I mean, the answer is obvious in that we are the desirable place to plan on a long-term fun career.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. And that is a big challenge industry-wide, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So it sounded like the board was already set to make a move to the outside. It was a pivotal moment for them, but they had made their decision. That's how we're going to go forward. So what do you think they saw in you that said, hey, Ken Rue's the right guy to lead us to the next level? What do you think they saw in you that excited them about you becoming CEO?
Yeah, I think two things, and I alluded to them before. The first one is my resume is about growth, and particularly, if you will, the last 25 years of my career has been about successful growth and in many places in entrepreneurial situations. And so once they shared the data with me, I could see very quickly what their concern was, and that was an area of growth. So that was one. And number two, I think I convey a certain amount of excitement and enthusiasm, and I'm not sure if this is the right word, but casualness towards working with everyone. And I think they sensed that it wasn't going to be an uptight, dictatorial type of situation, and that they believed that the company would do well with that type of leadership.
Excellent. And from hearing about how you and they assessed the situation, it sounds like you were assessing them as much as they were assessing you to assure right fit.
Yeah,
and it sounds like everybody was asking some really good questions at the table. So as you've started to introduce new best practices and new initiatives, what's been the general reaction among some? I'm sure there's some people there that have been longstanding employees that have been there for many years, if not decades. And how have they been, to what extent, their reaction or receptiveness to your ways of doing? How's that played out?
Yeah, that has been a mixed bag. And as I said earlier, the executive team who is energized to grow understands that there are things that we can do better in the business. For example, when I got here, there was very little data available for anything other than, if you will, the income statement that the accountant put together at the end of the month. And so how do you know whether you have sourcing opportunities? How do you know if you're buying raw materials? How do you know if all of your operations are as productive as possible? How do you know if one person is, or one group works better than another group? How do you know if you're trending the right way and all of these different things? So there was no data available. So one of the things that we are in the midst of doing is we are upgrading to a new ERP system, which is happening right now, which is, of course, stressful. But once it is up and running, and if you will, doing what the old archaic ERP system is, then we're going to take it up a step further and start to use it to, if you will, collect data and measure our operation and look for areas of opportunity and improvement. So that's one area. Another one was, this is more financial, it was an FP&A process. The business never really had a budgeting mechanism, a sales budgeting mechanism that was built on a bottoms-up forecast of customers and the specific parts they bought, a cost structure that measured all the different accounts. Are we, as I said earlier, are we sourcing correctly? Is our labor being used effectively? What are our overhead costs, marketing costs, that kind of thing? And so we're putting in tools to, again, to measure it, but also just simple budgeting tools so that we actually have a plan and are executing against it and things like that. So I wouldn't say it is absolutely not adding bureaucracy of a large company. And it would be, to a certain degree, it's actually making yourself more measurable so you can actually run more effectively and free up resources to reinvest.
Mm. So as you got involved into the company was already doing well. The company was already showing signs of being, by and large, a healthy company, but I would maybe say it was a scenario of good, not great. So you're moving it to great, maybe. And there's a lot on the table that you just talked about. That's a lot. So how did you, what were your first priorities? Like what, like when you went in, all right, what do I need to accomplish first? What are my top three? How do I prioritize? Because there's so many levers you could pull, but only so many hours in the day. So how did you kind of set forth your priorities as you got into the role?
Yeah. Again, the reason they went outside, or one of the biggest reasons they went outside, and I think the reason they hired me, was because of their concern for growth. And so they had this excellent organization. And what I have discovered over the last year and a half is that Kirby truly has a competitive advantage in the world. So the people who are listening on audio can't see this, but this is a bag, for example, of 56,000 14 karat gold earring posts. And so we do all sorts of exotic stuff. And the reason I show that is because, for example, it's really funny because when you go, you can buy solid gold earrings at Walmart and Kohl's and they're not very much money. But when you realize that we take this gold ribbon and we stamp it and we make earring posts, and believe it or not, we also make the balls, it's virtually like featherweight. But the competitive advantage to be able to do that allows us to operate with more precision, and with the number of machines we have, which we rebuild better than new, we have scale, we have precision, and we have, knock on wood, great quality and in good customer service. So we need to leverage that. And so the first thing I prioritized was the growth effort. And working with the sales and marketing team, we implemented a website. That was probably the first thing, is because we just need to make the world aware of who we are. And we are working with a great marketing organization who has built a website. We have a deliberate, if you will, marketing plan. So we write a technical blog every month. We have a newsletter. We have a presence on LinkedIn, as well as our individual LinkedIn pages. And so we are out there just spreading the word and just making ourselves known. We'll be much more active in trade shows later this year, so that in the various industries where we have a presence. And so that really was the first priority, is to really start the growth process. And now we're starting to see the results of that as we're getting inquiries, at least one or two daily, from potential customers reaching out and finding us and saying, oh, you might be able to do what we can do. So that was probably the first. The second one was, again, to streamline the organization and, if you will, make it more productive. So we've taken away a lot of processes that, quite honestly, weren't adding much value. And so we've been able to react faster, take some, if you will, fat out of the system, which has helped our cash flow, et cetera.
Excellent, excellent. So if there was a company or an organization, family-governed business listening, and they were maybe contemplating making the move that Carby did, bringing somebody outside from the outside to lead, a non-family member, what some advice based on your experience of joining the company might you offer up to somebody in that situation? Saying, well, we're thinking about going to the outside for leadership. What should we be thinking about? How should we be formulating our decision-making? Things like that. What kind of advice might you give them?
Yeah. And I don't want to be presumptuous about every family business, but I would simply ask this first question. As you look around at your organization, and the people in your organization may really be fantastic at what they do. They truly have a global perspective. Do you have a perspective, quite honestly, that is equivalent to your largest competitors? So, for example, is your sales leader able to go out and understand how to use the best marketing techniques, including website and blogs and everything else, to generate to you? Are you tapped into the most effective rep networks? Are you tied into other organizations that effectively get your message out? That's one thing. Is your head of operations, do they really have world-class pedigree? Do they understand the best practices of Kaizens and MRP and JIT systems and inventory management or those kind of things? Do they really understand? And if you can't look at your organization and say that I am as good in these areas as my competitors, then chances are you probably aren't. And I guess what I'm saying that in general is to understand your blind spots. And that, and again, that's where I give the board credit, is that they understood where their blind spots were and quite honestly made a bold decision for a family-owned business.
And it sounds like they did at first look to the inside and said, okay, where is their internal talent? And then at some point said, okay, we're best served going to the outside.
And look, so the previous CEO was from the inside. He had been there 14 years as a CEO when I got there. And as I said, the company was in great shape financially. And so he did exactly what he was supposed to do. But it's just a different world. And so they did that. They looked around and said, who do we have versus where we need to be? And they found their blind spots.
Would you say that sometimes I've noticed family businesses can be very, I'll just say, risk averse, you know, to the point of, sometimes you got to take calculated risks in business. Sometimes you've got to go out on the limb a little bit. Did you see any evidence of that in their, I'll say, previous decision-making from what you heard or observed prior joining? Was there any of that where there was a reticence to grow, or was it merely just needing that champion to drive it?
Yeah, I think it was the second part. They needed a champion to drive it because this is really interesting. I stepped into a great situation where Generation 3 did not necessarily want to run the business, but Generation 3 had been trained by Generation 2, who took risks, who made bold risks. He understood. And Generation 3 absolutely is committed to the business. He's committed to the people in the business. He's committed to being, if you will, an institution in the community. And he is excited to grow, continue to grow into a world-class organization. So, if you will, the ownership had the mindset of being, of taking smart risks, of being, you know, being growth oriented. And so they just had to come out. They went out and found, if you will, the person that was going to take it in that direction. For me, it's a very good ownership situation.
Yeah. Excellent. And at the end of the day, when you take away emotion and you take away maybe ego to some degree, I think a lot of family businesses at the core want, you know, a lot of the same things. And they want to see that continuity, right? They want to see the continuity of the organization, the continuity of prosperity, the continuity of growth and well-being for the constituents, whomever they may be. And it says a lot for the Carby organization to say, hey, we want that continuity too. And we're going to go to the outside to find the right person to help see it through. And here we are.
And it wouldn't surprise me, or I think the current ownership would be super happy if the next generation said, I actually am interested in that business and I do want to get involved. I think they would love it. They would certainly never discourage it.
Excellent, excellent. So one other thing that is always important to family-governed businesses is maintaining some of the traditions, the values, the things that the founding principles, if you will. To what extent are you acknowledging the past, if you will, or the core values on which the company was built in terms of and balancing that with many of the modern business strategies, techniques, capabilities, and resources that you're bringing to bear right now?
That's an interesting question because there's so many different ways to answer it. I will say, if you will, how the business is run, and we've talked about this in the last half hour, I would say how the business is run is completely different. It is a growth entrepreneurial mindset. That is how we operate. But what this business was built on and what has made it successful is something that we are simply leveraging. We're not trying to change what they do at all. We're mm-hmm. trying to leverage that and grow because of that. This logo that I'm wearing on my vest, it's hard to explain exactly what it is, but it's a really cool logo. And it was there before I got there. And I love it. And so it's the color of the Swedish flag, and it's a Swedish family. So that's how they got their blue. So there are certain things. And again, as I said, with the current ownership is, again, they're willing to, I wouldn't even call them risks. They're willing to make smart investments with well-defined growth opportunities, and they're willing to bet big on it. And if you will, that's mindset is something that we embrace. We're just a little bit more fanatical, if the right word, fanatical about going to get it.
Okay. So you're really staying true to the company, and it's more a scenario of elevate and celebrate. Let's do it more.
That's actually a great way to put it. Yeah, exactly.
And looking out to the future a little bit, Ken, what are some things coming up that are really exciting you, whether it be about the company, about the industry, or maybe what's going on in the world that you say, wow, that's really exciting me right now?
In the short term, we are on the precipice with some certain, if you will, verticals that will provide us with incremental growth, substantial incremental growth. And we are just about there with developing the products and stuff. And so that's going to lead to whole new opportunities for us, which are exciting, which will lead to growth and expansion. I think as an organization, and this includes the ownership, our ability to grow and demonstrate success can lead to broader capabilities or even further investment in deeper capabilities in what we're currently doing. And I think there's general excitement about where this can go, particularly with the ownership, about what this can be.
And as we're talking, it sounds like if we were to liken this to a book or a novel, you're in like maybe chapter 5, but I could tell your wheels are working to like chapters 9, 10, 11 with a...
It's a curse. It's a curse.
Yeah. So a lot of room to run. It's just, let's knock down these pins and then we'll knock down those at the right time. But that's exciting. Yeah. It sounds like a great runway.
Yeah. You know, what we've gone from chapter 1 to chapter 5 in literally 12 months has been how fast we've done what we've done. It's really exciting.
That's awesome.
It's also been a lot of effort too. So again, that's part of recognizing and just keeping having an understanding of where the team is.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. So final question, if one of our listeners wanted to learn a bit more about you, your journey, or about the Carby Corporation, what's the best way for them to connect?
Sure. So please visit carbycorp.com. That is our website, and it has a full explanation of who we are, what we do, the types of products that we make for our customers. I think you'd find that rather interesting. And then, of course, Carby Corporation has a LinkedIn website, and absolutely encourage everyone to follow it. And I personally can be found on LinkedIn at kenneth.ruh, R-U-H, on LinkedIn. And you can connect with me there if you have any questions or want to just find out more.
Awesome, awesome. Ken, thank you so much for sharing your journey and your insights with us today. Again, we've been speaking with Ken Ruh, CEO of Carby Corporation, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. Thanks so much for joining us at Growing Up B2B, and we'll see you next time. Ken, thank you again for your time.
Thanks, Ed.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.dalianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at dalianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.